It was just over a year ago that my wife, TC, and I moved out to Colorado from our home in Raleigh, North Carolina. I spent 15 years serving progressively larger Unitarian Universalist congregations in North Carolina and Tennessee until I retired from the church in Raleigh. We began looking for a place where we might settle down to spend the next phase of our lives. People still ask us why we chose Colorado. It's an easy answer. Our love of the mountains, family in the area, the fact that there are actually four different seasons out here as opposed to the sweltering humidity or the damp cold back east when you only have 2 days of spring and 2 days of fall in between. And of course, the fact that there's this really great Unitarian Universalist congregation right here in Fort Collins. Preach it. But the truth is also that we came here as political refugees. You see, TC and I were both arrested in the summer of 2013. We were charged with carrying a sign that was more than 5 inches square, about this big. Charged with singing too loudly, and in my case, singing off-key. And for refusing to leave the North Carolina State Capitol, which is a public building, when we were ordered to do so by the police. In short, we were arrested for civil disobedience. Just 2 of more than 1,000 people were arrested in North Carolina at the Capitol that year. And why were we arrested for civil disobedience? I thought you'd never ask. Where to begin? Well, earlier that year, the legislature had turned down Medicaid expansion, denying health care and health insurance to more than 500,000 of their fellow citizens, including 100,000 children. The legislature had defunded education. They'd outlawed any mention of climate change and planning for our coastal communities. We do have a coast over there, in case you know what that is. They restricted renewable energy because, you know, those solar cells suck up all of the sunlight. That's a true quote from the newspaper. You know, I love North Carolina. I still consider it my adopted home state. But it has broken my heart to see what's been happening over there the last several years. And what's happening in North Carolina is just a microcosm of what's been happening in the South for 2 centuries and more. And it's just a precursor to what's been happening all across our country for the last 18 months and more. It breaks my heart. And I know I'm not alone. How did we get here? Where did this great divide come from? Where we look across the chasm of people who continue to support a racist, a blatant liar, someone who brags about sexually assaulting women. We ask ourselves, how can people think like that? And they look back across the great divide at us and they say, are these people even American? I'll bet they don't even believe in the Bible. You know, it's really tempting to disagree, to dismiss those who disagree with us as ignorant or hypocritical or completely duped by Fox News. But that's too easy an answer. And it absolves us of any responsibility for the situation. Shortly after I moved to North Carolina from my hometown of Tallahassee, Florida, back in the mid-1980s, I met a young woman who worked at Planned Parenthood. This was at a time when an outfit called Operation Rescue was attempting to shut down abortion clinics all across the country. They were protesting outside. They would chain themselves to blockade entrances. They would chain themselves to equipment. One person even super glued themselves to a doorway to prevent it from opening. They would do whatever it took to shut those clinics down. We knew that they were planning to strike again the next weekend, but we didn't know when, we didn't know where. Operation Rescue had a meeting planned at the local Cracker Barrel restaurant. That's a southern institution, by the way. And the folks at Planned Parenthood, they needed someone to attend and to learn what they could about their plans. Well, I was the new kid in town. Nobody knew me. And I had a girl I wanted to impress. So I went to the meeting. I didn't learn much about the specific plans there, but what I did learn was about how earnest and sincere they were about their cause. Those who had been arrested the previous week talked about going to jail and sharing the love of Jesus with their cellmates, the local jail, and about how they would go back again if they had to, and a number of them were planning it. Here's the thing. They truly believed that they were saving lives. And they were, and no doubt many still are, just as committed to their sides of these issues as we are to ours. People on the other side of the Great Divide, I should say Americans on the other side of the Great Divide, aren't all ignorant rubes who've been duped by Fox News. They aren't hypocrites. And in fact, they're probably a lot more like us than we're willing to admit. But the abortion issue is just one example of the chasm that divides us. There are many others. Gun control, women's rights, GLBT rights, Black Lives Matter, the Me Too movement, climate change, the role of government, so much more. And somehow, all of these issues seem to be connected. You know, if a person is anti-abortion, you can be pretty sure that they are pro-gun rights. They're skeptical about global warming. They're still questioning the right of gay and lesbian people to marry, and so much more. Those of us who consider ourselves more progressive are on the other side of just about every one of these issues. But why? How's that all hang together? If we're going to begin to bridge the Great Divide, we have to begin by understanding the conservative perspective in this country. We're all Americans. We need to understand each other. As Pogo Possum said many years ago from down in the Okefenokee Swamp, he said, "We have met the enemy, and they is us." You know, I was born and raised about 100 miles from the Okefenokee Swamp. It's a real place, even if Pogo Possum's a cartoon character. My dad's family is from L.A. If you're from the South, you know that L.A. is Lower Alabama. He was born and raised during the Great Depression, and he lived for several years with his brothers and sisters in the hallway of a boarding house because his parents were too poor to be able to afford an apartment of their own. So for 2 years, the seven of them lived in this hallway, stringing up sheets for privacy. But my dad grew up, and he went to college, and he had a long and distinguished career teaching biophysics at Florida State University. And I gotta tell you, I could not be more proud of him. Because of him, I'm here today. We all have our stories. Stories of parents and grandparents, family lore that goes back generations. Our families and their stories, they shape us. They tell us who we are and how we see the world. These stories are key to our understanding of history, our values, and our understanding of what all this means. So let me give you an example, another way of looking at the world. It's a simple truth. We're survivors, all of us, even if we don't see it that way. Collectively, we are all that remains of 10,000 generations or more of humanity. All 300 million of us in this country, we're all survivors. For most of us, our parents and grandparents went through the Great Depression and a world war, and somehow they survived, at least long enough for us to get here. But before that, there was another world war, and during all those times, there was hardship and anger and hunger and persecution, much of which brought our ancestors to these shores. For some of us, our great-grandparents carved a place for themselves out on the frontier. They fought off the people who already lived here, and they built what they called the land of the free. Some came with enough to get started in business, and they built an enterprise. For others, our ancestors were brought in chains, bought and sold, and treated as if they were property. And history has been stacked against them ever since. Some of us were here before white or black people ever even came. These stories, the stories handed down through families and generations, shape us and our worldview. But there are so many stories that have been lost. I imagine that few of us could tell more than an anecdote or two about any of our great-grandparents. But they lived for decades, an entire generation, long enough to have children of their own, who had children, who had children, who had us. They're dead now, but their stories live on as our history, our myth, our culture. But the stories and the myths and the culture of Americans on the other side of the Great Divide are no less true to them than ours are to us. And we have to understand that if we're to have any chance of changing anyone's mind, much less their heart. To truly understand others, you have to walk in their shoes for a long, long time. And going back even a couple of centuries back to, say, the American Revolution isn't nearly far enough. For so much of history, stretching back 1,000 generations or more before even our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents were alive, so much of human experience, nature was red in tooth and claw. We don't recognize that now, sitting here with our cell phones and our cars and having safe shelter, most of us. Some of us even have air conditioning, others are hoping for it. We don't recognize this. But most of human experience has been simply a struggle for survival. Modern values like peace and justice and human rights have been around for a few generations. At most, they stretch back to the times of Jesus or Buddha. But before then, we had ice ages, and we had learning how to find shelter and how to make fire and domesticate animals and how to plant seeds in the ground just to grow a little bit of food. We finally figured out how to build things, a wheel, a wagon, a road. But for almost all of human experience, life has been a struggle just to stay alive and feed our families. Like I said, we're survivors, all of us. We just don't always see it that way. But others do. You know, our ancestors from 100 or even 1,000 generations ago, and 1,000 generations is only like 20,000 years, they were people that really were not so different from us from an evolutionary standpoint. They were just as smart as any of the rest of us here, but they didn't have the benefit of cell phones and Priuses and everything that we take for granted today. They were, in fact, even mostly unable to read and write until just a couple of generations ago. But they could think, and they could reason no less than we do today. And they knew what they had to do to survive. The world was so different then. Staying alive and feeding our families took strength and bravery. It took working together in groups and families and clans and tribes. It also took, and it still takes, a strong moral foundation. Morals like justice and fairness and reciprocity, cooperation, caring for others, and freedom. This moral foundation developed over thousands of years and hundreds of generations, and without them, our ancestors would not have survived, and we wouldn't be here today. But these values are not absolute, and they're not the only values that inform who we are as human beings. In fact, some of these values are even in conflict with one another. The sword of justice should be tempered with the cloak of compassion. With freedom comes responsibility, and so on. The values that we espouse as religious liberals are not the only values that have been passed down to us. For almost all of human experience, we traveled around in small groups and clans. Eventually, some settled down to till the soil and build towns. Others continued to wander, to scavenge, to raid their neighbors. And in just about all cases, whoever was stronger would win, because it was all about survival. And strong communities required strong leaders. Thus, another moral value, which we don't always recognize, is respect for authority and strength and power. Whether it was your father, the head of your clan, your lord, or your king. Disrespect these people, and you're ostracized if you weren't killed. Of course, today, we liberals almost reflexively question authority, especially authority that's perceived from a hierarchy or from pure strength or power. Rather than being strict father figures in our families, we strive to be nurturing parents. We raise our sons to be caring. We raise our daughters to be strong. We believe that everyone should play by the same rules and that might does not necessarily make right. But the truth is that we still live in a world that as often as not does not work this way. Just look at so many countries in the third world. Look at the growing divide between the haves and the have-nots in this country. This strict father worldview, which demands respect for authority, is actually a term which was coined by George Lakoff, the linguist. It also has been handed down through the generations, and it still strongly influences conservative values. It demands discipline, it evokes obedience, and it explains, among other things, why conservatives today revere the Ten Commandments so much more than they do the teachings of Jesus, for example. It enforces a hierarchy that places God at the top, eternal and unchanging, the judge of us all. And then the men who are part of your tribe, and then the women and children who come next, and then men and women and children in other tribes who today we call immigrants, followed by their own women, children, and such. And as for the earth itself, well, you know, the Bible did say it was given to us to fill and subdue, and we certainly have done that, haven't we? 7 billion plus survivors. You know, a lot of people still see the world this way, with this hierarchy and this respect and obedience for authority. It's the world of their fathers. It's a world of life and death which has existed for far, far longer than our own liberal values. Many of today's conservatives are rural people. Not all, but I suspect that many of them would say that they are still living on a frontier in one way or another, determined to make their own way in a world which has been largely stacked against them. You can drive out of Fort Collins half an hour in any direction, and you'll find that it's lonely country out there. Last weekend, TC and I drove up through eastern Wyoming on our way to spend a few days in the hills, in the Black Hills of South Dakota. We drove up through a number of small towns that were full of vacant windows and locked doors, and maybe a restaurant or a Family Dollar or a gas station is the only going concerns. There never was an economic recovery for those towns. Maybe elsewhere, but not for them. Their jobs have disappeared. Their young people are moving away. Those communities are falling apart and dissipating. But we here in Fort Collins, in this congregation, we don't necessarily see it as we drive through these dying towns on our way to somewhere else, somewhere we'd rather be, usually. We don't talk about this huge class divide nearly enough in our congregations. We're focused on issues like gay rights, Black Lives Matter, the Me Too movement. And I'm not saying that these issues are not important. They are. They're vitally important. But at the same time, our congregations are made up mostly of working or retired professionals with college degrees and the time and the leisure to work on those specific issues. I imagine that few of us here have spent our careers mining coal or working on a farm, driving a truck, or cashiering at the local Walmart. In fact, many of us make a point of not even going to Walmart at all. You know, we decry Fox News as having come to dominate conservative thinking, but at the same time, many of us take comfort in watching Stephen Colbert and late-night comedians, and it's small wonder that there is a great divide between us. Small wonder that those on the other side talk about us as the liberal elite. Because I have to say, as much as I enjoy watching Stephen Colbert, I don't think he's helping the situation. Nobody likes to feel as though they're being laughed at. Nobody likes feeling like their values are debased or their leaders are ridiculed. And the irony of all this, the irony is that if you go to a Walmart, especially in the South, you'll find much more racial diversity there than you will find in any of our congregations. I doubt if you'll find many union members in Unitarian Universalist congregations. But you know what? It's the local labor unions who are the best at organizing for justice. And team sports like football and basketball, they're like the great equalizers across the social spectrum. Most of us rather settle down with a book, I imagine. Maybe bridging this great divide isn't as hard as it seems. But what it does require is that we be willing to step outside our comfort zones and begin listening to those who are just trying so hard to survive in a world that is slipping away from them day by day, month by month, year by year. Because only after we begin to understand them can we possibly hope to be understood ourselves. Amen. Shalom and blessed be.